Welcome to Tastes of the Tropics. And now, here are your hosts, Gretchen Schmidt and Christina Favreto.
Bienvenidos a Tastes of the Tropics. Today the topic is peppers, as in pick a peck of pickled peppers. This is Gretchen Schmidt from Edible South Florida.
This is Christina Favreto from the University of Miami.
And our guest today is someone who is a Renaissance woman. She's chef owner of two pan-Latin restaurants, president of Gran Cacao, and an international chocolate expert, culinary historian named James Beard Best Chef, Mid-Atlantic, Gran Cocina Latina, the Food of Latin America, won the James Beard Book of the Year Award in 2013. And today we're here to talk about peppers of the Americas, the remarkable capsicums, yes, then that forever changed flavor. Welcome our good friend Marisa Precia. We're so glad to
have you.
Such
a beautiful book. I have to say that as a book person,
I love it. I love
my book.
I
just want to keep touching it.
It's very warm. I know. We see peppers on the top of it, and then inside, I have to ask right off the bat here. We did earlier in the year a story on peppers, and one of the things, like mangoes, okay, experts in mangoes, you could have, you know, there are hundreds and hundreds of varieties, but outside of a few, each one, I'd be like, holy cow, our mango expert Richard Campbell can tell me the difference between a Floragon and something else, but they start to look alike. How did you tell them all apart? Ooh. Peppers? I mean,
they have their own personality. And I can say that with certainty because I have tasted every single pepper that I grow in my garden and every single pepper that is featured in the book, which, by the way, is a fraction of what I normally grow.
That's
I grow
amazing.
About 300 specimens.
You grow.
I grow in my little New Jersey backyard. And obviously, I could not have my entire collection featured in the book. But I'm not sad because I was not about to write an encyclopedia on peppers. So, but what I selected was something that really impressed me for a number of qualities. And I tasted every single one of them, even the hottest ones.
Well, I think what's beautiful, what I have to urge our listeners to do is really go and look at a copy of this book in your bookstore and buy it, because you will become interested in peppers, even if you're not. And it's so appealing because there are tiny little purple peppers and then brown ones that are kind of squashed and ones that look like persimmons. It's just the variety is astonishing. And to know you've tasted them all, and you're kind of the pepper whisperer.
So, and get to know the peppers and understand their flavor differences or aroma differences is something that I have gained through years of living very closely to these plants that are extraordinary in every sense of the word.
Well, let's tap into some of your culinary historian expertise here, because the story of peppers, they originate in the New World and found their way to other countries.
Yes. In fact, they were born in the Bolivian Amazon, but in the Piedmont area, so it's closer to the Andes. And from there, they spread out everywhere, first using birds as vectors of dispersal. And then once human beings realized that these tiny peppers, because, you know, the ancestral peppers were small, were edible, they were not going to die, they were not poisonous, they started working with them and transforming them, choosing traits that they wanted to perpetuate. And so therefore, from these tiny peppers, you have this plethora of forms. You know, the phenotypes of peppers, you know, are extraordinarily large.
And why is it that, the for example, when I think of the spiciest of peppers in cuisines, these are the cuisines that are in hot countries. I think of Indian cuisine. I think of the vindaloos in Goa that are very hot. But these made their way. These are not, were not endemic. They discovered them and embraced them.
Peppers were not native of India, and they arrived there with the Portuguese. But obviously, it's a secondary point of development. So you do not have a large genetic diversity there. And also, they are kind of support players to cuisines that are very complex already. When an Indian cook uses pepper, mirchi, they're thinking about heat. not necessarily, you know, scorching heat, but they want heat to be a backbone to other flavors. In the Americas, it's very different, mm-hmm. you know, because we have this enormous genetic yeah. diversity, and farmers, prehistoric farmers, silent gardeners, you know, of our New World history, they understood peppers as the great complements to very basic cuisines that depended on a few iconic staples, say yuca. Mm-hmm. You know, so when you find yuca, you also find hot peppers. But as these peppers developed into this incredibly large number of forms and with different levels of heat, different textures, different colors, they began to use them for those qualities. So, you know, if you go to Mexico, where, you know, the original, the ancestral capsicum onion was a tiny chiltepin, but then you have this plethora of different chiles, you understand that these cooks have a sophisticated understanding of cooking with peppers.
Earthiness, and exactly. Do they use them for medicinal purposes as well?
Yes, in yeah. fact, yes. And there are, you know, we have references to, you know, hot peppers use, you know, for their medical properties, mm-hmm. Especially if you had, you know, colds, you would be given, you know, hot pepper syrups. In some cases, as in the case of Cuba with the Chihuahua, you would have some applications of the hot peppers on your chest.
Sure.
Well, that's
like a poultice. Yeah, like a poultice. I found 19th century references to a Chihuahua poultices. But when you work with peppers, both fresh and dry, you understand that they're the great allies in your kitchen. Mm-hmm. Some of the dry peppers, for example, that Mexicans use have great texture and great color. And their heat level is nuanced. Some are very hot, like the chipotle, you know, which is the smoked jalapeño. But some are very fruity, like the mm-hmm. chihuacle negro, which is typical of Oaxaca, La Cañada. And it's used for mole negro, but it tastes like a prune.
Really?
Like raisins and prunes.
Delicious.
But it's not yeah. exceedingly hot at all. In fact, if you're making a mole, which you work in negro, you want to use other peppers that have different levels of capsaicin. So you would use puya, for example. You're using guajillo, which has this beautiful bright color, and almost this like a translucent red skin that reminds me of amber, Chiapas amber. Mm. You might want to pair that with puya or another, you know, dry pepper that has more heat. So that's why in a mole, which is the quintessential, you know, Mexican sauce, you might find half a dozen peppers. So people think, oh, what, is overkill? No, because there is a sense of complementarity there. It's, you know, some peppers are used because they have great color, others because they have great flavor, mm-hmm. fruitiness, which is always important in the sauces, and heat.
And what about, you spoke of pairings. Of course, there are going to be natural pairings with certain foods. Certain peppers work better with chickens, other with beef. What about wine versus beer with pepper? What would you serve with some of your pepper meals?
Well, I, you know, in fact, alcohol intensifies heat.
Oh.
You know, I've learned that. In fact, I've done pairings, you know, with pepper-laden chocolates mm-hmm. and some wines, and I notice that then the capsaicin kicks in even harder when you're, you know, we're using alcohol in the pairing. I like beer. Mm-hmm. When I'm, you know, when I'm serving for certain pepper stews, hot pepper stews, I like beer. Or I like kind of mellow wines that have a lot of fruit. I like Malbecs, for example. Or a Syrah.
Yeah, that sounds good.
But I would not go for a Cabernet, for example.
Okay.
Well, the heat of pepper, you know, pepper, as we know, has many different nuances. Some people can't bear the heat. Other people, you know, they are looking for the ghost pepper,
but it is,
you know.
It's a developed acceptance. You know, in Bhutan, little children are introduced to eating hot peppers by their parents.
Yeah.
And again, you know, they don't have a culture of peppers, you know, that is ancestral. They got peppers, you know, like the Indians.
But they built up a tolerance.
But they built a tolerance, and so the parents immediately start giving the kids hot peppers. Cubans don't do that, and they should, because we do have delicious hot peppers. We have the ají guaguao, which was the Arawak Taíno hot pepper per excellence. We gave Florida the dátil pepper.
Oh, that's on
and
the
this is in my
taste.
Book.
Thank
my
you
book.
Very much for that gift.
It's
yes,
it's in my book. You know the legend, accepted legend, says that dátil arrived in San Agustín with the Minorcans. No such thing.
Oh.
So we do know that it was someone who had contacts in Santiago de Cuba, my hometown, who asked for seeds of the dátil pepper. And so I did find references in 19th century botanical sources absolutely describing the dátil.
Well, how about
all
that?
The qualities,
a myth debunked.
You know, and described as the most aromatic of all the hot peppers, and
nice.
Also described as very hot. So there you are.
But Cuba doesn't... tell us a little bit about peppers in Cuban cuisine.
We use peppers in everything we do. In the sofrito, in the Cuban sofrito, peppers rule. But we're talking about sweet peppers. We're talking mm-hmm. about bell peppers or mm-hmm. cubanelles. And in many cases, for example, if we're making a sofrito for black beans, it would be the jicachucha, which is a capsicum chinense, which means that it's a relative of the habanero and the dátil. So the range of, you know, heat levels in that family, the capsicum chinense, is extraordinary. So we have something that is very sweet and but very perfumed and aromatic, like the jicachucha, something mm-hmm. very hot, like an habanero or a seven pot from Trinidad, or a moruga scorpion, which is extremely hot.
So tell us about, there's an image here that I keep going back to, the Bolivian rainbow, which has the most beautiful purple, and then there's a gorgeous orange fruit on the same branch.
Well, actually, that's an ornamental.
That's an ornamental.
That's an
so
ornamental.
You can't eat this.
And,
oh, you can
very important to understand this. All peppers are edible.
Yay.
From the hottest to the sweetest. And in many cases, I've been to garden centers, you know, where I've read signs, do not eat these peppers, you know, next to the ornamentals. No. The thing is that the ornamentals are bred for their beauty.
Mm-hmm.
So they will not have great complexity of flavor. But when I have no peppers around, I have a beautiful ornamental, I just use them for the heat.
Like edible flowers.
Yeah, you will get a bit of a sort of sometimes a bitter backbone, which I like.
I like bitter.
But then, and heat, but not great flavor complexity.
Are you finding, I put a little bit of pepper in my ground coffee. Is that something that's done? It tastes delicious in the morning.
I've never done it, but I might do that now.
But chocolate, we were talking about mole a little
yes.
bit. Chocolate or cacao or cocoa powder plus pepper is something that we see a lot of in Mexican cuisine. And
yes, and not only Mexican cuisine. For example, Guatemalan cooking in Alta Verapaz, cooks use a powder made with cacao nibs and a chile ululte, which is a tiny pepper that they smoke over a wood fire.
So smoky,
they put them
chocolatey,
in baskets, and they hang the baskets from, you know, on top of the hearth, actually, and the peppers are smoked. And so they make this this powder that is used to season chompipe, which is a turkey. So it's this big turkey soup, has this beautiful flavor combination. I use that combination a lot in my cooking and in my restaurants. And I also learned to make cacao balls with that. So you can actually grind the cacao in a food processor until you get a paste with the chiles. And then you can shape them into little balls and just let them dry. And then when the time comes to serve these beautiful soups or anything that you want to use this pepper mixture with, you just grate it like Parmesan at the table, and it's just great.
Nice.
Just a tiny, tiny hot pepper bowl that you pass around with the cacao.
So
amazing.
What are some of your favorite ways, maybe unusual ways to use peppers that we wouldn't think of?
Well, I think that the selection of recipes in this book
yeah.
shows a full range. You know, I want it to be didactic. This
yeah.
book is very didactic because it has the history and the archaeology, which is, you know, pretty much in depth, and the gallery of the fresh peppers and the dry peppers, where I explain you know, their history, and I measure them and I taste them. Then I have these incredible recipes, but I started from very simple recipes because I believe that, you know, we should lose our fear of peppers.
Yes.
So I have very simple recipes. I have, for example, pickled peppers.
You have a lot of pickles, and what I really like are pickles and vinegar
and
condiments.
And condiments, but it's the simplest condiments. For example, one that I learned from a Cuban woman from Yara. Over there, you know, this is rural Oriente region, there's always a bottle of vinegar with these tiny Chihuahua peppers that grow wild everywhere. Just a little bit of sugar and salt for balance. That's all you need, you know, with the vinegar. I mean, obviously, there's a process. You know, you want to keep this for a long time, which I do. But that's at the table. And so that's heat with acidity, which is very important in Latin American cooking, especially in Cuban and Caribbean cooking. So that's very simple. Then you have all these beautiful pickled peppers with onions and garlic and other ingredients. And then you have sauces. For example, fermented sauces, which is what I prefer to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I just stop cooking the peppers or making, you know, kind of fresh table salsas. I prefer to ferment. And I don't ferment for a long time. I make my version of sriracha, which I call miracha, which has brown loaf sugar and also has as vinegar, Japanese rice vinegar, okay. The dark one, which is mellow and beautiful.
Milder. Medium.
Yeah, so, but I ferment the peppers. You just, you know, I use Korean finger peppers, or you can use jalapenos or fresnos, something red and beautiful and juicy. Put them in food processor. You know, you chop them coarsely and then put them in the food processor with garlic and sugar and salt, and you know, they will practically liquidify, and then you put them in a jar. You put them in a jar to ferment for 5-6 days. That's enough. I use Korean peppers and sometimes fresno or red jalapenos, pepper with beautiful red color and very juicy. You chop them coarsely, put them in the food processor with the sugar of your choice. In my case, it's, you know, brown sugar, the good one, and salt and garlic, and it will almost liquidify. Then you put them in a jar, a mason jar will do, and you wait for 5-6 days. You steer
only
them.
5-6 days?
5-6 days.
Wow.
You steer them every day.
Uh-huh.
And you will see that this lactic fermentation will just, you know, it will bring acidity to the mixture. At first you will taste it, it might be almost sweet, but then it will become acidic, but a nice, beautiful, fruity acidity. At that point, what you do is that you decide whether or not you want to add more vinegar or not. I do. I add the Japanese brown vinegar. And what I do, I strain the pepper mash and I boil it a bit because you want like 10 minutes, 5-10 minutes, because you want to keep it for a long time in your refrigerator. Mm-hmm. Let's say you have an incredible sauce. So I use a number of peppers for that, as I said, but also rocotos and manzanos. Rocotos is this beautiful, almost
Peruvian,
apple-like
yeah.
Peruvian pepper from the Andes. It's a Capsicum pubensis, one of the five domesticated members of the Capsicum genus. Amazing, amazing with rocoto, very hot. I use ají amarillo, which is a Capsicum baccatum from Peru. Both incredibly wonderful. My husband is addicted to this now. Mm-hmm. So I have sort of changed the recipe to suit his taste. And they're always, you open my refrigerator and you will find jars of all this. And they're extraordinarily useful when you're cooking. Just a little spoonful of that when you're making a stew or as a table salsa. I would not buy sriracha. I'm sorry, I have my own miracha.
Uh-huh.
And I think this is a recipe to start. And then, you know, you have, you're pointing at a recipe.
This
photo is amazing.
It's fresh fruit with Guatemalan chile coban and cacao condiment.
That's the one. That's the condiment.
So simple.
The simplest of recipes. So you have these beautiful fruits in season. Imagine good Florida mangoes sprinkled with this condiment to die for. So that's the best for me. You know, when I have a guest and I have a party, I serve this.
And pretty little glasses. They're almost
these
like shot
Moroccan,
glasses.
These are Moroccan tea.
Glasses,
which I collect. I started collecting them in Morocco, and then every time I see them, I buy them, and just get an old tray and just arrange the beautiful sticks of fresh fruit, and then sprinkle them with the condiment, but also have a side, have a plate with a little bowl with the
apples?
Condiment.
Even without apples or
apples,
pears?
Apples, I would not, because they unless you put lime to avoid oxidation. I like this combination. I like papaya.
Color.
I like, you watermelon. Can use green mangoes and watermelon. That's a good combination.
What about figs?
My God, I didn't think of figs, but it would be fantastic.
That would be pretty tasty.
With figs. You're giving me all these ideas. coffee
very,
and now with
I'm very
figs.
Very pepper-oriented, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. There's lots of recipes in this wonderful cookbook. Tiger skin peppers.
Look
what is this?
No,
pepper
steaks. With pepper leaf chimichurri.
And this is great for vegetarians.
It is.
And actually
in fact, I
vegan.
It for my vegetarian friends.
Right. This can be vegan as well.
And these
yeah.
are Dutch bell peppers with this incredible color.
They're beautiful.
It looks like bacon. It's striped.
It looks like bacon.
Yes. Yellow and orange, which I roast. And then I unfurl and just turn them into this. steaks. And it looks like churrasco, like the entraña,
right.
That Argentinians like to cook. So what is also interesting about this recipe, it's not just that I am featuring the pepper by itself as something important, not as a complement to anything. You can eat this as a steak, actually, if you're a vegetarian or not. But the chimichurri sauce is made with pepper leaves because pepper leaves are edible. They taste a bit like parsley. And if you look at the chronicles of the conquest of the Americas, you will read that the Incas, for example, use pepper leaves for cooking. And the Spaniards adopted that. If you go to the Philippines, they make stews.
Using the pepper leaves.
Using the pepper leaves.
Well, there, chefs, there's your trick for the day. I haven't heard
Yum.
That one, but, that adds
I'm
color.
Making
and
this.
Okay. On that note, Marisa Precia, I think we could talk about peppers and cacao and everything for a lot longer. But we're going to tell everybody to pick up peppers, the new cookbook here, which is Peppers of the Americas. It's a wonderful cookbook, lots of recipes. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And with Cristina Favoreto, this is Gretchen Schmidt of Edible South Florida, and thanks for listening to Tastes of the Tropics.
Thanks for listening to Tastes of the Tropics with Gretchen Schmidt and Cristina Favoreto on Edible Radio. For more information, visit ediblecommunities.com. This podcast is a production of Edible Radio, all rights reserved.